I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to the Waypoint UK podcast. This is sort of technically episode 3 of the Waypoint UK podcast, but we did other podcasts before as Vice Gaming. Hopefully you heard them, and if you didn't, well, it's too bloody late now. They've disappeared into the ether, probably. My name is Mike Diver. I'm the senior editor here at Waypoint, and I'm joined today for a year-end special where we're going to round up some of the most awesome games we've played in 2016 by three wonderful other members of the UK games media, because we like to mix it up here and get guests in rather than just drag people in from Munchies and Noisy, who, you know, by their own admission, hate video games and probably hate me too. I've got in no particular order, in just the order they're written on my piece of paper. Alice Bell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Alice Bell from Video Gamer.
Thank you for having
Alicia
me.
Alicia Judge from IGN.
Hello.
I only just learned what IGN stood for when the podcast the other day.
Do you know
day.
What? Yeah, I literally, I had no idea either.
There you go.
Yeah.
International Gnome Network,
that's
right?
Exactly yeah. What I've been saying yep. for ages. But apparently it's not International Gnome Network, it's Imagine Games Network, which makes a lot more sense.
I like to imagine games as much as playing them.
Yeah. It explains why on my first day when I showed up with a big bushy white beard and a little pointy hat and a gardening implement, everyone got very confused.
They were worried, but soon put pay to that kind of tomfoolery. And Chris Bratt from Eurogamer. Hello, Chris Bratt.
Hello. Right, you say no particular order, but I was definitely last in that order.
Well, you were, but only because it's written here. And I'm sure, if you look at these names, they're just alphabetical for first
okay,
names,
actually,
aren't
yeah.
they?
Oh, yeah, it's alphabetical.
Yeah.
Sorry
that's
for being
probably more by luck than design, if I'm honest. But
classic.
There we
classic
go.
Classic Chris Bratt.
classic Bratt.
If it had been my surname, you would have been like right up there at the top.
God damn it.
With your B.
Oh, well, man. You'd have been in the middle, wouldn't you, Chris?
Well, okay,
oh, yeah, of course. You're
between a bell
well.
And a judge.
I'm a bell. Yeah.
I'll live with this. Yeah. It's fine. I'm sorry. I've already derailed your podcast.
Minimally derailed. It's not so bad. I asked you before the three of you came in just for a couple of your favourite games of the year so we could kind of start off with some of the ones that we know we all really like. So I'm just going to smash in with one of them that I know that two of you pointed out as a real favourite, and Overwatch.
Oh,
which we just had some awards in America. There was a anthropomorphized razor, is that right? No, that only refers
yes,
to
that
nature,
was,
doesn't
that
it?
That was odd.
Yeah.
That was an odd
razor
moment.
Robot Man.
We're talking about the Jeff Keighley Awards, right?
The Jeff Keighley Awards, the
Jeff
Game Keighley Awards.
Jeff Keighley video game pageant. Yeah.
I'd prefer it if it was the video game pageant.
Yeah. I absolutely did not see this. And all I'm hearing is anthropomorphized razor. And video games pageant. And I'm wondering what the hell is going on?
It was a special time. Yeah. But Overwatch won Game of the Year was what my point was.
Also, there was an amazing part of it with Overwatch, in the fact that the game director on Overwatch, and also I think he's the vice president of Blizzard, Jeff Kaplan, always introduces himself as like, "Hi, I'm Jeff, off of the Overwatch team." And he's like, no, you are. Come on, you are the Overwatch team, and you're the vice president, and you're like very important. Stop being humble
you
about
are
this.
Overwatch.
Yeah, he does it every time in all the developer diaries. Every time you see him,
no, it's really nice,
and it's completely done the trick. That's why I picked that as my game. To be honest,
because
of Jeff Kaplan. I just think he's a very nice man.
But for anyone, I mean, I'm sure that people who listen to this kind of thing probably know what Overwatch is. You've already said it, made by Blizzard. It's not the other games they do, but it's kind of like the other games they do, just from a different perspective, right? That's basically the elevator pitch. Can we do the games we do, but as a first-person
shooter? Yeah, well, it was another game for a long time. Project Titan was going to be the next big MMO, we thought, from Blizzard, until it somehow, something terrible happened, and then it became an arena shooter with, like, a gorilla in it.
Yeah. Big science man gorilla.
Right. Big Harambe.
Yes. Oh, God.
How long into the podcast
is that?
Avoid all memes in this particular podcast. But I mean, you know, for Alicia and Chris then, like, I mean, is that a game that, you know, when it came out, you just stuck playing regularly because of personal enjoyment, or do you play because it's very much a team-based thing, right? I mean, this is for me why I fell off it pretty quickly, because I wasn't playing regularly with the same people.
Yeah.
Even though I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, do you think that that's what's maintained it through the year? People, it's really accessible and it's fun, colourful.
Well, Well, like for IGN, we started playing it pretty much actually when it was in beta. It was like my first week on the team. And so at lunch, we all like, everyone else goes into the kitchen and goes really social, and the whole IGN team just whack out their headsets and just sit at the same desks and we all start gaming. It's great. But so we started playing it pretty much immediately, and every single lunch for 6 months, we've played it. We've not played any other game. And that's been, that's been a really
good thing to say with other, you know, with developers and PRs and stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Have you played our game? Yeah, totally. Yeah, the one with the bison. Yeah, it was a good game. It was a good game.
The one with the guns.
The
Thinking Man Shooter. I really enjoyed that one that came out this year, yeah.
But that has been a really big part of it, you know, just having, you know, if you ever play it by yourself, I don't know if you guys have, like, when you do the single player, how you find it, but I never enjoy it as much as when I'm with my team and you're going, get to the point, and like, okay, let's switch it up. We need a healer. And like you.
And is that better when you're sat by them? Presumably you're sat with them. It's not just communicating online.
Yeah. I mean, there's totally that too. You have like the spin on the office chair kind of victory dance, which is great. But even when someone's like off work and at home and like you're playing through headsets, like it's just the.
So if you're working at home and they're having their Overwatch thing, you stop what you're doing at home and you jump online.
You get a WhatsApp message saying, we're Overwatching. Like, get on right now. You can tell we've got a bit of a problem, haven't we? But it's great.
I think that's a problem reflected in many other homes and offices and student halls, I guess, around the world, because it's been pretty popular, right?
Massive. Yeah, I think they've said 20 million was the last time they took numbers. The Blizzard have sort of moved away from doing that after years of... describing World of Warcraft subscription numbers to people.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you said you played since sort of the beta. I was the same. And I think the big appeal to this game for me personally was I always wanted to play Team Fortress 2. That game looks ace, and there's a lot of comparisons to be made between Overwatch and TF2. But I was too late to it. By the time I got there, everyone was like, there was this whole of the game on top of it that I just didn't understand, with hats, just so many different types of hats.
Yeah.
And Overwatch is I think I benefited from being there from the start, and like I care about patch notes, man. Like they release patch notes and I read them and I get excited because like some cooldown has been tweaked slightly, and it is a little bit all consuming though. Like I have not played Dishonored 2 this year and it looks really good and everyone says it's great, but like Overwatch was just sort of there. I couldn't do anything about it.
I think the reason why I love it so much is what you're saying about the patch notes, the fact that like, and just the fact that Jeff Kaplan says, oh, you know, I'm from like the Overwatch community. Like it's...
Well, he said he's off.
He's
the
off.
Team.
Oh yeah, no, I think that might have been
you.
I think that might have been slightly more.
Because I was suddenly endeared to him a lot more. It's like, all right, I'm Jeff mind, off of Overwatch.
That's what I hear, but it's almost that.
But there's something about that. There's something about the team that makes it. You can tell they bloody love this game and they pour so much into it. And when you talk to like the community managers, they're so like, you know, they'll really take the time to tell you about patch notes. If there's a problem, they really listen to their community. So with Symmetra, who's just been buffed recently, like she got buffed because of loads and loads of feedback from the community, and they listen to what they want. They're like, okay, right, so her turrets, we need more of them. When she first starts off, we're going to give them 6 instead of 3, and we're going to change her shield, and we're going to do this to the teleporter, and like loads and loads of tweaks that then they detail in like a 12-minute video. And just like that level of really caring about their fans and creating a game that's just really carefully crafted and really well thought out and clever in its gameplay.
I guess that's something that a lot of teams can't do. I'm guessing at Blizzard, they've got a big Overwatch team that just do Overwatch.
It's
not like other studios where like that bit breaks off to make that game and then they've done that game and then they get moved around.
Yeah, and you there's some community guy in the middle of it being like, oh God, there's so much, I don't know. He's a forum post.
Overwatch is a long-term plan, right? Yeah. I mean, what we've seen this year, as good as it is, I'm guessing like it's only going to get bigger and bigger, right? This isn't a game for sequels. This is a game for like, you know, version
Absolutely.
2, version 3, version 4.
Yeah, and you're totally right about the communication. They actually make the rest of Blizzard, which historically has been pretty... Oh God, I'm going to get grief for this. Pretty good at talking to their community.
Get grief for that? That's a nice thing to say.
Because like the Blizzard fans have a very special, sometimes quite volatile relationship with that studio when it comes to that, I think. But the Overwatch team has made the rest of the company look slow and quiet. And that most they've made the rest of like online multiplayer focused game developers look slow and quiet, because you're right, like the Symmetra change was a big deal. And part of that was because we had like the game director release a video where they went through like all the changes, like the really minute stuff as well and addressed what players have been talking about throughout. And that's been there from the very start. They had one blip, I remember. I think it was at BlizzCon, last year's BlizzCon, where they wouldn't quite talk about whether or not they'd ever sell Future Heroes. Don't know if you remember this. And then they went on to like be like, no, we're never going to do that. Everything's right. going to be free, except for like cosmetic stuff. But since that blip, they've just been, yeah, one of the best examples of how you talk to your community. Who cares about like Symmetra, how many turrets Symmetra starts with? Like that's a big deal to people. And they understand that, which is sort of why this game has worked and why I think it's going to have like a real lifespan to it. Hmm.
They've been really good as well, not just communicating, you know, changes like, you know, buffs and debuffs and all that kind of stuff, but also embracing the kind of the fun aspects in the community. Mm-hmm. And it has such a big community now that you will see people tweeting like, you know,
it's
like,
made for cosplay as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When they're making stuff those like heroes, you know, they're like, right, that's, you know, there's like beginner, like intermediate and advanced level cosplay.
Yeah, 100%. And like but just stuff like, you know, it's because there's such a huge pool of people playing it. That you'll just see someone tweeting like, you know, that face when you're playing Mercy and Genji spams heel and then it's just mm-hmm. a bunny doing like, you know, hands over its eyes thing. And you're like, yes, I understand that. Yeah. and you get, you know, the actual Overwatch account sort of, you know, retweeting, you know, Hanzo memes and stuff. Like, there's really kind of bought into that whole aspect of it as well.
Like the
really
Sonic
good.
Social media account, but yes. slightly less twisted.
Yeah,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, I do enjoy the Sonic account.
But I think the whole key thing of all of that is that all of this level of community is built on a solidly good game.
Yeah, we should probably
core.
Say that as well.
Yes,
yeah.
That's true.
Even in my brief dalliances with it, I've enjoyed the moment-to-moment play. Like, even when I'm getting totally murdered, it's
absolutely.
Still kind of, you know, it's fun with it.
Because you can shake it up by having that really clever thing of splitting the heroes into attack, defense, support, and tank. And each plays completely differently, but each is so vital. Like, I don't know about you guys, but like before a game like Overwatch, I was kind of a bit like, support, not that fussed with it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be my first choice. I love support. Like, I main support on Overwatch. And
so that's like healers and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
healers.
Like
exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
like Zenyatta is who I'd main.
He
can be like quite offensive.
See, the floating
the
one.
The floating one. Yes.
This is how
my,
you know your stuff, Mike.
I kind of know my stuff. Apart from, I thought I did. And then the official Waypoint account tweeted out about pharmacy. Or Farmer Mercy. And I thought referring to a whole other game. And I was like, wait, I better just Google that. Oh my God. Okay. So that's like kind of fanfic, Overwatch fanfic stuff.
Yeah, yeah, almost. That was always going to happen.
You know,
yeah.
like two characters.
Right? Yeah.
And
so
they're beautiful children.
But it is great. It is great. I think how it's just kind of changed how we approach character design and character choice and tactics within games like this. That's been really fascinating.
Oh, dude, I thought I'd hate the hero switching as well. Like, I came... So the character design is similar to some of the big MOBAs like Dota 2, League of Legends, like a set core abilities, real flavor to them. And I was used to like having a main in those games. That's all I play. And then the idea of like switching the mid game felt really weird to me.
Yeah,
like, surely I just want to play the one that I'm best at.
Like a failure almost. Yeah. Like if you're switching, it's like, oh, something's going wrong. Maybe I should switch. But
and it ends up being what makes the game in many ways because it like you're always thinking about how to counter other teams. And also when you're getting crushed, it gives you some sense of relief to know that you can try something else. Like you're not just locked in for like, that's the thing that Dota 2 gets wrong because the games are so long.
And then you're locked, for such a long time.
If you're not very, very good and you're against a team that's much better, it feels like you're torturing yourself by the end of it.
25 minutes of misery.
Exactly. Yeah. And this gives you something where you can like, okay, well, I can try something else because you don't have to be like the best or the most accurate player or the player, the best reaction speeds. You can just be smart about how you pick characters. And that's, like will take you a really long way in that game.
I really hope it stays that kind of fun and accessible and stuff as well, and you don't get that layer of, like you said, the Team Fortress 2 kind of like unwritten rules and
kind
of metagaming.
Because it's already what, like 23 heroes now, I guess, with the latest one.
I wonder how
many heroes until it starts to, like Hearthstone's having that problem, I think. Their COD game where you try and get in as a new player now and there's a lot.
Well, they just did a big update, right? Which, you know, I kind of got information about, but that's something I think, unless you got in on the kind of the ground floor, you don't, you know, but it's on the 35th floor by now, Hearthstone. Yeah. I'm like, I've no idea what happened in the lift before now.
I don't know. Like there's a good chance they'll run into that problem because they're going to be adding heroes and new maps for the foreseeable future. It's a tough one to negotiate. Like there are four roles for each character. So I guess you can sort of always break it down into that.
And I guess they can, I mean, there's no reason to right now, but like, there's something that has like League has retired characters and stuff, has it in the past?
They did it temporarily, or they've done like huge changes to them as well. I'm trying to think how many characters League of Legends actually has at the moment. It's some
they
ridiculous.
About 140 in the summer.
Scary
when
number.
I wrote my book about it, so how, I should remember these.
Like, do you have a book on League of Legends?
I did. I'm not going to plug it here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, if you type Mike Dagger League of Legends, you'll probably.
I kind of inadvertently have. Yeah, buy my book. But yeah, I mean, you know, Overwatch wouldn't be the phenomenon it is unless it played well. Mm. I mean, thinking from that about other shooters, because we just kind of got over the big shooter season, didn't we?
Oh, it was
with the Titanfall
season,
and,
yeah.
I didn't actually play Battlefield 1 at all, but I have played COD and I did play Titanfall 2, and I really liked what both of them are doing. They're trying to do new things. I mean, do you think it was a good year for shooters? We saw Doom do pretty well,
good, wasn't it?
Really good year for shooters.
But considering people say that that genre is stagnant, and you know there aren't enough new ideas, we're playing the same game each year. This, like, just looking at Titanfall 2 and Doom, like that isn't remotely true.
I think if Doom though had been released around the same time that Titanfall 2 and everything's been released, I don't think Doom would have done that well. Doom was released what, in like March, and it was in or around
I think
that
it was
period.
May.
Was it May?
Yeah, yeah.
It was like it was around a period where I remember not that much else was coming out. Mm-hmm. So Doom was like mass, whereas Titanfall has actually been really innovative in its gameplay. Like there's that bit where you can there's like a time
no spoilers
jump. Well yeah no spoilers. No,
I think we
no
talk spoilers. About it. We've written an article on Waypoint. Patrick Lepek wrote about it.
Specifically on that level,
that
isn't level, it?
Sweet, yeah. Specific because it is a really clever bit of game design just in shaking up how you do shooting tactics, and it's just a shame that I feel like Titanfall's been a little bit swallowed amongst all the shooters that have been coming out in the last
do you think it'll do well
months?
You know, when people get their vouchers for Christmas or whatever and they're like, what am I going to buy?
Yeah.
Or with their new consoles, you know, what I'm going to buy now, and if they're sensible and they're selling Titanfall 2 for like £30 or something, they'd be like, yeah, that's reviewed well, I'm going to get that.
I think Black Friday actually helped it as well, which is like this is the first year I've really felt it in games where Black Friday's had a huge impact on sales beforehand.
Right.
And like Titanfall 2, I think in the UK was something like £20 in HMV or something.
That's amazing.
Which is ridiculous.
I saw some people tweeting.
It was just a
receipts.
Few weeks after it was out, yeah. And yeah. It's like, okay, so right.
And then it was knocked down as well. Loads of people got email offers.
Yeah, like
as well.
It's an interesting one. You wonder kind of what kind of lasting damage that's had, because everyone seems to agree that this is one of the most exciting shooters we've seen in years. And I don't know exactly how many people are playing it.
Yeah,
I don't think that many. I think it was something like I can't remember the stat exactly, but someone was talking about like, you know, how many people were playing on Steam or something, and it was like 10,000 people or something. So that's quite low,
so
isn't
low.
It?
Yeah, I guess
that's pretty low. I mean, in my head, that's like a whole. That's most of AFC Bournemouth Stadium. I like to think about big numbers like that in terms of football grounds.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like how many people are playing concurrently? How many people are watching you concurrently on a stream or something? If you see like it's like 3,000-4,000, you're like, well, that's a, you know, League One kind of good turnout.
Right.
80,000. That's Old Trafford. You know, sort of think about it in those terms.
It was a weird. Because it was, I think it was like, it was Battlefield, Titanfall, COD.
And Battlefield did really well, to be fair to it.
Like Given
how badly it set itself up
with
some of its marketing. You know, it wasn't a good, weirdly, a good year for shooters, but not the best year for marketing of games.
No, quite.
I can say anything about Battlefield. I can think Dishonored 2 had a terrible live action trailer as well that didn't really sell it.
Those are always a little...
Live action trailers are always
us,
a...
To be honest.
Yeah. No, sometimes. I suppose they're not. But I don't know
exactly who they are for.
As advocates of this medium, of these things that we enjoy so much, you know, and you want people to play them. Like if I said, oh, Dishonored 2, it's great, and kind of like, you know, go your own way, approach every level the same. And I said that to, like, I don't know, a friend of mine who's only just a bit into games. He might look at that advert and go, just a bunch of people stabbing each other with magic, isn't it? And there is some of that.
Magic stabbing.
Kind of it
introduces the idea of the clockwork soldiers and mansion.
Yeah. Which is the other, I guess, sort of quarter 3, quarter 4 of the year, big level, like level that everyone was analyzing, right? The Clockwork Mansion. So we can move from Titanfall's brilliant, like you say, time switching level, I suppose. Because I know that I highlighted Dishonored 2 as well, because Alice, said you love it. I've really enjoyed. I got to admit, like, I played about 3 hours of that Clockwork Mansion level. There was a preview event, I'm sure. Some people probably went to it. And then I got it home and played up to that point again, and I haven't gone past it again. So I've actually played the Clockwork Mansion 3 times now.
Oh, well, there you go.
But it's the best bit, right?
I mean, it's really good. I mean, there are some other standout levels in there that are just beautiful. It's so beautifully designed as a game. It's so lovely. And just the flow of the levels and the buildings, and it's dense but without being crowded, and it's not too big. And it was just lovely. I loved it. And there are so many approaches you can take to it, because everyone was doing, you know, tweeting and like putting up little clips of them doing cool stuff. Yeah. And then people saying like, oh, I found a different way through the Clockwork Mansion. And I was like, yeah, I found a way you can get in when he doesn't even know you're there. And stuff. And I
was like, there was a wonderful argument on Twitter that erupted between some games journalists that we know, I think, like about whether or not Jin Dosh would hear or his guards would hear the glass breaking.
Yes.
To go. And someone was like, well, of course he can't hear it. He's like in his laboratory.
Yeah.
Like, what about the guards? Well, he only knows where you are if you're treading on the, if you're pressing the switches. That was great. I love it when journalists go after journalists on Twitter. It's great. In a friendly way. Yeah. Like, we don't, you know.
Did you guys see that video that was doing the rounds of, it was like 80 ways to kill Kieran Jin Dosh?
Oh,
and
God,
it's like,
yeah,
it's like so, a 15 minute video set to the most glorious classical music. And it's perfectly edited, and it's literally just, there's, you know, the first kill is as Kieran Jin Dosh says, like, come find me in my laboratory, you can freeze time, blitz through like a wall of light, bash through loads of doors, like keep teleporting and freezing, and basically get him as he's walking across the bridge, blitz over to the side, pull the lever, and then he just falls down immediately. So it's like, he's like, and just like the level of creativity, the way you can,
but you couldn't do that. I'm getting, is there a new game plus in Dishonored 2 then? You can go back with all your fancy abilities?
There isn't yet, but I think it's something that works.
Because I mean, there's, you know, when I got to him, certainly, I mean, when we did it in preview, we had a lot of powers unlocked, and that was cool.
Yeah.
Like going through myself, like now at home, like I've got, like, you know, the shadowy walk and the pouncy one. What's it called?
Pounce.
You know, powers. I wish it was called Pounce. Bound.
Far reach.
Bound. Yes, cool. I like bound. Could mean two things, couldn't it?
Yeah.
You jump very far, or you know, tie someone up.
Well, how much were you playing it in terms of like going and looking for the runes? Like, how did
I haven't much at home, but I know obviously that's the way to unlock all your powers.
Because if you like go out and use the heart and
you
like
beef yourself up.
Absolutely.
Because there's that bit before you get to Clockwork Mansion, isn't there? It's quite big and open. That's, and like, I just sort of looked at that and went, I haven't got time for all this. I know I want to. There's like immediately like 18 different things come up. You pull out the heart, it's like, I'm just not going to look at that again.
And the heart's always yabbering away, talking about disease.
I love her.
So in terms of 2016, like standout game characters, you love a vital organ.
Yes, I love the disembodied magic invisible heart of my dead mother / lover, depending on who you pick.
The games are very weird. But that video they mentioned is like the appeal of this game. That's the best way to sell it to someone, right? Like, you, there's an objective and there's 80 different ridiculous ways
so
to try and accomplish it.
Absolutely.
There's another freelance game journalist who was like, look, you can put a mine on a dismembered head, like a disembodied head, and then throw it, and then you have a grenade.
Oh my God.
Someone's head.
I just love the fact that she's got, do we all play as Emily to start with?
Yeah.
Pretty much, because we had Corvo.
Because she's so slinky.
She's very slinky. You know, when she has the domino thing, and obviously, you know, but you can do it with your own doppelgangers.
Yes,
I love that kind of little thing, because like you were kind of, you know, it's what you're getting at. They don't tell you can do this stuff. There's not like a big tutorial. It's like, you know, you can link people. Well, that's good. It doesn't ever tell you can link your own doppelganger, does it?
Yeah.
So you can just do that from afar and then kill the doppelganger. That's great.
What is the domino effect or skill or ability? Because I've heard a lot of people rave about it for this game.
Domino links, I think, up to four you can do,
Yeah, you level up and you can link.
Yeah. You can link people together.
Okay.
And then if you were to knock one of them out, all four would be knocked out.
Right.
So you put one to sleep, they all go to sleep. If you stab one through the neck, they all die.
Okay, right. So people have found ways to try and like accomplish weird stuff with
them. But like what you can do, you know, if you get it from afar, you can see the guard over there, he's got his back turned, whatever. You can link via domino to your own doppelganger that you can create as Emily. And then it's like, push him off a
ledge. You're pointing at someone else in the vice office then when you said that.
I know.
Sorry, I'll go over there with her back to you.
You can, all those, and then you can use one of your other powers to throw your doppelganger into the sea, and then they'll all drown.
This just sounds like a game full of systems to like muck around
like
with.
I saw someone, I can't remember who it was, but they figured out that they could survive really high falls if they cast a doppelganger at the bottom and then killed themselves.
Oh my God.
Dropped at the bottom. On top of their doppelganger. Yeah.
That's excellent.
It's amazing.
To break their fall.
And there's so many little details in it that they just get right that are really good that I noticed. Like, there was one bit where I was looking at two guards and I was like, right, I'll take that one out first and then kill that one because they won't like you won't know. But they were having a conversation and I took out the first guard mid-sentence and then the other one was like, what the fuck? Like turned around because his friend had stopped talking. I was like, that's awesome.
Excellent. Video games. Stop trying to be smarter than
me. Yeah.
That's used to be the amazing. Timer. Really clever. Because normally in video games, you can take one out and the NPCs will just be like, oh, well,
boss.
He decided to stop talking.
That's fine. I'm just going to carry on looking out into the middle distance.
Just stuff like that. And then they have that high chaos, low chaos system where if you kill people, the game kind of gets harder in a way. Because, you know,
the first one had the rats. In the first one, the more carnage you caused, the city became more
horrible.
Yeah, the sickness spread.
This has blood flies, which are horrible.
Yes, which are
blood flies.
Yes, they're like big, horrible mosquitoes.
Okay.
That will attack you.
Go into your intestines and lay eggs and blood flies burst out of you.
Okay. All right.
So you get more of those.
This is the same game that Alice said was lovely.
It is though. There's a beautiful mission set in like, it's basically an empty natural history museum with giant like stuffed birds that you can jump around on and stuff. It's great. It's lovely.
And hasn't, again, no spoilers, hasn't that Dishonored 2 also got a time sensitive
jump
time
yes,
jumping.
Yes, they showed a bit of that off
stage
in preview stuff.
Right,
so there's, there's a
so
mansion.
That and Titanfall 2 basically got the same idea.
Yeah, weirdly. Really, but they both, you know, they were both in development at exactly the same time. So it's not a case of like either one copying. It was just sheer coincidence.
Harvey Smith on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Whoever it is over the other place.
But it's another thing I noticed because I did a couple of different playthroughs and I'll probably do more. But I did a high chaos one and a low chaos one and little things were different. So in the low chaos one where I hadn't killed anyone and everything was fine and I was just incapacitating people, I walked past some dock workers and they were just having a conversation. One that was like, I'm really sorry, the shipment's late, I'll get it tonight, I promise. And they were like, cool. And the high chaos one, I walked past and they started battering each other with like bits of pipe. And I was like, this is awesome.
That's cool.
The malaise.
I mean,
got to them well,
from a conceptual point of view, it's awesome. It's not awesome that they're battering each other, but
they are fictional.
Actually, a world where you feel like you're having an impact on it. That's great. I keep seeing. Do you guys know Tom Francis, developer of Gunpoint? Yeah. So he's made a game like that's all about its systems. It's like you play. It's like a 2D sort of puzzle game where you play as like Inspector Gadget. Breaking into buildings. If he hears that, he's going to be so pissed off. But like, he's made a game all about systems. And like, he's supposed to be making another one right now, but I'm convinced all he's done is play Dishonored 2 and like shared GIFs of like weird stuff he's done with these abilities, which like says a lot about it.
Is it a game designer's game? I used to hate it when like doing music back when people say, oh, that's an artist's album or a musician's album, you know, like, you know, filmmaker's film, whatever. Does Dishonored 2, do you think it appeals to other game makers because it encourages you to try to break it?
I think so. I think that that part is probably the most important part. It appeals to people that want to try and muck around
find
with this stuff and actually see exactly how far they can take it. Because you know, like games have taught us to like set realistic expectations for how these systems and these abilities can work and exactly how much impact you can have on our world. So when one actually goes a little bit further, it's exciting. I think that sounds like...
Like, I think that the Clockwork Mansion is a really perfect example of that. Of it totally encourages you to literally fall through the cracks. And as, like, levels
I like that.
Are
that's,
moving,
a, that's a box quote right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Take that one. But I know, I really love that because you can totally be a fairly, you know, casual game. You just enjoy adventure games and you thought you know, you just want to approach this as a standard, almost fable, like I'm going to play this nicely, not killing anyone or killing loads of people. You could literally play it as a straight up shooter. You don't even need to get the powers. You know, like there are so many different ways
to play. You don't have to take any powers.
You don't have to take the powers. You can just go through, or you can push the boundaries. You can look for every single bone charm, every single rune. You can fall through the cracks. You can eavesdrop on like NPC conversations. There's so much freedom here. It's very much a game developer's game, but I would argue that it doesn't put off or kind of alienate people who are fairly kind of new to gaming. It's a really, really nice middle of the road.
And there's a lot of sneaking in it, which is nice to say, because Watch Dogs 2 had...
I sensed a segue
a
there.
A bit of sneaking in it. Yeah, you can see my emboldened thing over here. But Watch Dogs 2 came out at arguably not a great time either amongst all these other big kind of, you know, AAA pre-Christmas games.
And oh God, you've both written articles about how much you like the freaking...
We basically wrote the same article, Alice.
The cool hipster hacker people.
The hipster hackers.
So I know where this conversation's going.
What I liked about that, I had just come off the back of finishing Persona 4. I was playing on my Vita as I went around and I kind of... semi fell in love with that kind of group of weird misfit children.
Yeah.
None of them fitted together and they just kind of got on with things. And Watch Dogs 2 was kind of the same immediately. Like, you know, how are you ever friends? But, you know, because they're all so different from one another, but there was a real believable chemistry about them. Like, you did feel that they'd seen some shit in their time and, you know, it had you know, formed the bonds and stuff. And when you as, what's his name? I've forgotten the main guy's name now. The main guy, you know, when your character kind of becomes part of them, like, to start with, I was like, there's no way he's going to get on with them straight away. But I don't know, maybe they were talking before, because you start the game with him doing like a initiation.
Yeah, they're like
basically
trying to, yeah, how good is this guy,
how good is he? It turns out he's very good.
He does, yeah.
With a billiard ball, yeah, which I try not to use.
She's the ultimate type of hacking, really,
the ultimate
hacking someone with a
hacking someone's
ball
brain
sock.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think that game is about as close to a real world open world as anyone's got since GTA 5, isn't it? In terms of its level of detail, the stuff that's in it, without it feeling forced, it kind of feels it feels like it goes about its business without you.
Yeah.
A bit like,
yeah,
kind of,
I mean, it does, it's obviously, it lacks a little bit of the same polish that you're getting.
Oh, definitely,
for GTA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it does, yeah, because I went on holiday to San Francisco.
Deliberately, because you knew Watch Dogs was coming out?
And so I can be like, yeah, it really feels like San Francisco. It's really like,
but does it?
39. Yeah, like, there are recognizable bits. I'm sure if you actually live in San Francisco, you go, yeah, it's fine.
Literally, but everyone does this at E3 after having played Grand Theft Auto as well. They're like, oh God, yeah, they just got it so right, didn't they?
This pier, yeah, exactly, looks just like the pier. Yeah.
That Lombard Street is really twisty. But it was, yeah, it was a really kind of fun, like, vibrant city. And it was such a nice departure from Watch Dogs, the first Watch Dogs.
Which was kind of miserable.
Which was miserable and great. And then Aiden Pierce was just not a charismatic front man.
Literally the
game.
Most charismatic thing about that man was his coat.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, 100%. Yeah. His coat was the thing that people remember about him.
When and your coat defines you, yeah, as, yeah, a character, that's yeah, problematic.
It's not a great
story. Because his motivation was like, I think it was like my nephew got hurt, mm-hmm, but because he was robbing a bank.
Yeah.
And not for any like altruistic reason. He just wanted to rob a bank. But the group in Watch Dogs 2 are very much, they're kind of like varied and vibrant, and they're, you know, young and kind of angry and feel disenfranchised in different ways and stuff.
But don't quite know why some of the time.
Yeah.
You know, they're finding their anarchic purpose.
Are they actually, yeah, so like, I know the answer, well, I know your answers to this. Are they actually likable? Because I haven't played Watch Dogs 2 and two things put me off the game. First, the prequel to it, I found really bland. And second, like, some of the promotional material, those guys just rubbed me the wrong way. It was a bit like, yeah, oh, hack the world. Like, this is what a game developer sitting in some plush studio thinks Anonymous is. Like, I was worried that I would just bounce off it. But apparently you guys...
No, I thought the same.
Like, well, cynical.
I
resisted. Like, fall in love with them. You know, we all get this kind of like, do you want to come play a bit of this game? Yeah. And I was like, not really.
Because I saw it and I was really like, these guys are going to be terrible wanks, aren't they? I'm going to hate them. I've seen the trailer. But they actually are really quite charming, because the trade, I still don't quite get the angle they took with the marketing, because it was very kind of like, yeah, this is like GTA with hacking, this guy, look, this is ramping a car and a motorbike, and they're kind of not like in the game.
It's still hilarious, you can hack a car.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's amazing, it's great,
this
fun.
Car go backwards,
but it's like in the trailers, it implies that they've set up in like an abandoned building and stuff. Their base is in like the basement of a Dungeons and Dragons shop, like a board game
awesome.
Shop.
It's probably awesome. I love that. The first, I mean, I don't know if I had been told that, but when you first go in there and you can have a little conversation with someone about like imported German board games, they're like, oh my God, this guy's a total. They're like geeking out about like
they're adorable. No,
German Golden Road or something. I can't remember. I'm making stuff up. I think it's based on a real thing.
Am I right in thinking everyone's favourite is the guy with the mask that does
wrench,
like,
yeah,
emojis?
Yeah.
Once again, I say that out loud. I've hurt my heart with that sentence, because it sounds so bad.
He is the wankiest. Yeah. But he is like, and they kind of are a bit, but in sort of an adorable way. Okay. Because it's like, wrench is basically what like a guy that likes emojis but also read Watch Dogs would make a mask. Like, that's right. His mask, you know? Okay. And they're just kind of lovely. And it's nice because they're all friends and they all look out for each other. And they're like, well, no, we're going to do this because you need this thing done. So we're going to do it for you, kind of thing. Oh. It's really sweet.
It does get a bit grim, we should say. It is Watch Dogs. It gets a bit
when you're
nasty,
battering people with a billiard ball.
Thing as well, because I kind of feel like the canon way is non-lethal. Mm-hmm. And that you hack the system. And
I've accidentally killed people by, gleefully starting cars and stuff, and they've run over a couple on the way to a lovely date.
You monster.
Just with a Micra or something.
But it feels like that, because part of your, Marcus, the main character's part of his thing is like he was unfairly profiled as a criminal. So it seems a bit weird that he would then be like, I will now commit crime.
I wonder if that's
3D print a rifle.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like that the canon way of doing it is non-lethal, and they kind of wanted to be non-lethal. But then they were
Grand
like,
Theft Auto was a thing. And you can't really make an open world game without trying to appeal to that audience, it seems.
Exactly,
because they're so expensive and massive. I feel like that. I got the sense that the billiard ball was like, this would be an edgy thing that would happen in Grand Theft Auto, you guys.
The billiard ball kind of makes sense in that kind of homemade silliness, like, oh, that's not actually going to work. Oh, that's quite effective, actually.
You're talking about a bunch of like people in the basement of a Dungeon and Dragon shop,
which
who
is
want
why,
to help each other out.
The real guns feel so, like you say, out of place. The only reason I've ever had to pull one out is because when the police or whoever pull their guns on you in that game, you die very quickly, unless you at that point it's just like, no, I'm gonna have to shoot you back, I'm really sorry.
Hack the guns,
that'd
be good. But I don't think I've used my gun in it once. Oh, I did use it once because I needed to go out for dinner with my husband and his friend, and I was like, I just need to, okay, but I need to get to the same point.
I hope I had to kill a bunch of people to accommodate this dinner, darling.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I've slaughtered 8 innocent people just so we can go out for. Yeah. What did you go out for?
Indian.
It was probably worth it.
So I did feel like, the guns were kind of, maybe the devs didn't want them in there, but kind of felt they had to have them.
Felt the pressure.
It's a bit weird because you can do stuff like, track down a serial killer, but kill, people on the way to doing
exactly.
that.
So. Become a serial killer on the way.
I'm just a really bad driver, so I apologize to... I mean, not in real life, in games.
Do they not do the whole, but when you run people over, it just pushes them to the side?
No, which I have seen in Final Fantasy XV, actually, in a wonderful glitch video where the car comes past at the start
and then
pushes Ignis up the road.
Amazing.
Hey, let's transition to that game. We like Watch Dogs 2, though. I like Watch
Dogs
2.
Yes, I like Watch Dogs 2.
But, Final Fantasy XV, long, long development, as we all know. Started as other games, started with other characters, or characters have been through various... changes across the years. But I sort of move on to games that we weren't expecting to be all that good, which I think Watch Dogs 2 probably is
probably the best example of that, actually.
But I think Final Fantasy 15, I don't think anyone thought that would be as good as it is. And it's got problems, I'm not going to lie. I'm still playing it right now. The first time Cindy popped up in it and my wife is sat next to me and I'm just cover your eyes, love. This is not for you.
Yeah.
But it made me feel, I think I'll probably tweet this, genuinely embarrassed for games. And it's not something you can just say, whoa, that's Japan. They do something like that sometimes. It was just, they're just little annoyances in that game that spoil it for me. I mean, anyone else been enjoying that?
It was definitely surprising. I don't think the game is perfect from what I've played other by any stretch. Although Final Fantasy games often struggle to reach that. They're incredible in a bunch of different ways, and then there always seems to be something holding each one back. Like if you look at the 13 trilogy, it is so different to 15. Like in 13, the characters were unlikable. It was to begin with very, very linear, and then you play 15, and you start out in the open world in a car with this ridiculous looking, boy band, everyone calls them a boy band. Yeah. I'm sorry, they just are a group of characters that it is a delight listening to them talk to each other and be friends around each other.
I'm a bit bored of hearing Gladdy Boy tell me to take off my jacket though.
Oh, but that's his thing. He's got his own shit going on.
Take off your jacket.
He realizes he's in a very camp boy band and he's just trying to he's just trying to process that at the moment.
Or maybe he's just concerned that his friend's going to become iconic for his jacket as a game character, and he doesn't want that fate to fall him.
He knows.
You don't want to be Aiden Pierce. Get that jacket off.
Well, a lot of games have, come and gone during the development of that game. So yeah, he's seen a few jackets.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Not least of all Jacket, of course, from the popular Hotline Miami
Exactly, and he's wary that his prince and his pal is going to face the same thing. There's those two things. It gets so right, like plunking you in the middle of an open world and letting you do whatever you want, sort of putting gameplay first, and actually having these characters that are. Do you guys play 13 at all?
I finished.
I started it. Yeah, exactly. And got really bored.
Yeah, and like a huge part of that was that the characters were just not fun to be around. Whereas this gets that right. However, I think it like you can tell it's had a very weird, messy development. It reminds me a little bit of Metal Gear Solid 5 in the fact that you can just sort of you can see that it's unfinished. Like the fact that really you have to watch the accompanying Kingsglaive movie to like get a good handle on the story.
Have you had the pleasure?
I haven't, although I've like.
Oh, I watched.
I'm a big fan of the fact that Aaron Paul is in that and really into it. I will at some point watch it.
That, what's her name? You know, who plays Cersei in Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Is like little girl.
She's Luna, right?
Yeah, Luna Frey.
So this is I won't get into spoiler territory, but the sort of the big payoff that you'd sort of want from the storyline doesn't sound like it's there. It doesn't sound like they. As terrible as it sounds, quite had the time to do it. Maybe another 10 years.
In terms of the game.
A huge part of Final Fantasy is always the overarching storyline. Like, it's always really confusing and messy to get into place, but that is the draw as well. Like, the ridiculous, super Japanese, wonderful, fantastical, like, world they create each time is a huge part of why people adore this series. And I'm not sure... It's got the overarching story this time, but it's got the characters.
I've read ahead a little bit, as I'm sure we all do on occasions, and I'm not as far into the game as my brain is in terms of knowing what happens.
Okay.
And yeah, you know, because you read things, don't you? And people want to do their little opinion pieces and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I think it peters out a little bit.
The problem of being an editor here, you have to read someone's opinion on a game. You haven't finished it.
Yeah, you do spoil. We all do that, don't we? We all spoil games for ourselves. It's a terrible sin. Apart from the small things. But on that topic, though, in terms of a game that I don't think any of us spoiled because it was inside. Because we didn't. None of us played it, right? Until it just came out.
Played it when it came out. Yeah.
But like, it wasn't like something like, come and see our game. It was just like, here's the game.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Which was so... good. So that was one of my big surprises.
But
see, that is interesting because it has been divisive. It's the same what our team at IGN, like half of us love it and half of us are like, it's pretentious. What was the point? Like, they just really didn't like it.
I did like it. Like, I liked the design of it. I think it looked really good and I liked a lot of the mechanics and stuff in it. But I think the problem for me, like, two of the guys in our office played it and really, really loved it, and especially hyped.
Video Gamer gave it a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, so Thomas Ory.
I mean, I know that, a site is not...
It's after Burns left and we were suddenly allowed to give 10s to things.
10s, 10 out of 10.
So Thomas Ory, my editor, gave it a 10 out of 10, and then Dave, our deputy editor, played it and loved it as well. And they both hyped up the ending to me and were like, oh, it's amazing, like there's a bit after and it's just so good, and I played it and I was like, is it?
I'm not a massive fan of the ending. I mean, I totally don't want to get into spoiler territory.
Yeah, exactly. I saw an IGN article months ago that was about 9 or 10 different people offering their theories on what the ending was.
There are some crazy theories of just what the game is. I went on a massive Reddit thread and was looking at, like, someone thought it was an allegory for cancer and the boy is a white blood cell traveling through the body.
That's,
like, you know, like
a theory.
Level, proper going deep, but it's... I don't know, it inspires that kind of conversation, doesn't it? And that's what I really like about it, that everyone comes away from it with a completely different take on what it could be. But just if you strip it all back and just look at it as a game which tells you to keep going right until the game says stop, the way
Apart
that you
from
do
that
it is
bit
fun.
With the dogs.
That bit with that, that's
you
know, the thing.
You go left then and then right
to avoid them. But that's the thing. That's what I, you know, the procedural animation on it is gorgeous. So when the boy trips and falls,
it reminds me actually
fluid.
Of the last garden reminds me of Inside in that sense. You know, when the last garden you can kind of run the little boy up to it, he goes, whoa,
yeah,
and
I can
it
totally
kind of feels
that.
Quite natural, yeah.
Absolutely. And like for something that's, you know, quite two-dimensional, I think that's really, really beautifully done. And the puzzles, there's genuine points where the game has designed it so perfectly that if you stop running or like take your finger off the the controls for a single second, you're going to get eaten. And it literally goes down to the wire and your stomach is just in your mouth. And
the underwater creature.
The underwater creature is one of the most terrifying things I've ever come across in games.
Pad down and walked out of the room. I couldn't do it when I first saw it. And it was horrible. Hair and teeth. The teeth were implied, I think, in my head. You know, but I'm just thinking hair and teeth. Like, there's so much hair and, oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sounds great, you guys.
She's like mental troll doll. Troll doll of your worst.
Yeah, right. So, you meet various things through the, it's a nice short game.
You can complete it in a couple of hours.
Yeah, it's an afternoon.
I think it does really well at introducing the different thing, if you do this, this will happen. The different mechanics and stuff, it introduces them really well. And so you know how to deal with, you sort of know-ish how to deal with a problem, but you have to discover.
But like Limbo before, of course, same developer played it. You know, when you get something wrong, the game doesn't go keep trying. It just sort of says you're dead.
Yeah.
And then keep trying, but you're dead. You're horribly dead.
Yeah, brutally.
You've been, pulled apart into several pieces, but... Yeah, there's a, because we were talking, the US Waypoint guys and I, about horror games this year, and I'm not sure there really have been any outstanding horror games, but Inside is the game that just that creature underwater and just the kind of the kind of humanoid shapes that follow you around in it, and what are they meant to be, and the way it's you control them, it's quite
creepy.
Yeah, it's really unsettling, real kind of like tingly skin kind of nastiness.
I tell you what I really didn't like as well is the noise that happens when the boy falls or jumps off a height. There's this horrible kind of, and he buckles a bit, and there's a horrible kind of clack noise that just made me feel like his shins were being driven into his knees. It just really made me uncomfortable.
So when you get to my age, your joints crack all the time. You walk around, we just walk around
stop
house,
jumping off ledges,
going up the stairs. Inside, sort of go loop back to the Keeley, what do we call it earlier on?
Keeley video game pageant.
The Keeley pageant.
It's where all the video games put on their nice dresses.
They all get
and
a little
presented.
Rosette.
Like a debutante ball.
Inside one best indie game, for what it's worth. I think there's been quite a good number of interesting independent video games this year, in terms of outside of that, let's say you get a new console for Christmas this year. And, it comes with the Call of Duty, or you buy your FIFAs or whatever. But I want to explore these smaller games I've read so much about on sites such as IGN, Eurogamer, and Video Gamer. What's been good for you guys this year? What kind of from the independent realm has stood out?
The Flame and the Flood.
Okay.
Oh, that's the one where you go around on a raft with your dog, right?
Yeah.
Is it? I played it briefly and struggled with the controls a little bit, but I hear there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
I lasted for 4 days, really? died horribly, eaten by wolves.
Oh, no.
And didn't go back.
So, the game is, for want of a better term, procedurally generated. So it's different every time you play it. Mm-hmm. And it's a survival game. So the aim is to survive as long as you can in this kind of post-apocalyptic flooded world.
Why do you need to get off the raft? Because that's how you want to get as far as possible, right?
Yeah, like,
you need to get supplies.
Yeah.
It's like
almost
a survival, survival game. Yeah.
So like meters to think about, like.
Yeah, so you've got hunger, kind of like warmth as well. Right.
Okay. And you get wet, don't you?
Get wet and you need to dry off. So you need to, you go down this river and you can stop off at different places. So someone that has a fire, someone that has different resources for you to collect and craft different things and craft yourself nicer clothes and things like that. And then the game gradually introduces more hazards. Mm-hmm. So animals that will attack you, but you can build traps to try and lure them into traps and things. You can get sick.
Does your dog ever get a little bit sad because it's cold or wet or hungry? Because if that's the case, then you don't need a meter that's telling me to get off the raft. That would be like the driving force behind it.
Possibly. The dog you can...
Being bothered.
But it's a dog in a video game. Surely they like abuse it to like make you feel...
Well, it carries
like
stuff for you.
That's how dogs work in games.
And then you can upgrade your raft so it has like a little kind of stove on it or like a heater on it and this kind of stuff. But the thing I like about it, which is a little bit different to other survival things like Don't Starve and stuff, is that you have to keep moving. So if you find a safe place, you have to leave it eventually.
Yeah, I like that.
Like you just have to keep going down the
river. Rather than like a base building kind of mechanic, it's always pushing forward.
Day to day, like,
encouraged to go to, there's a radio signal or something.
Yeah, there are little sort of things that you
trying to go down river.
Push towards.
I like that idea.
It's also more realistic in that way. You know, they say that if the apocalypse ever hits, your contingency plan should be to constantly be moving, because that's the safer thing to do. Is as soon as you buckle down, you're opening yourself up to other people to kind of steamroll over you. So it's a smart plan.
And I guess it also keeps the sense of survival very present. Like Don't Starve, or like even like a game like Minecraft to an extent, that seems like the start of the game and the... like a few hours in are very different. Once you've got your kind of basic setup and you can be self-sufficient, so you lose the panic, right?
Yeah, you never really, in the Flame of the Flood, you never really get to a point where you feel safe, I don't think. Because even if you're doing all right, you've got like some cooked rabbit or whatever in your backpack. And you're like, yeah, this is I'm a pretty good point. You can then, you know, get, you know, bitten, and then you get like septicemia, but you become poisoned basically. And the wound goes all horrible, and then you get sick, but then you need to get some antibiotics, but you don't have the stuff to make it and stuff. So it can all sort of turn on a dime.
What does the dog do? I feel like we haven't addressed the dog situation in this.
Dog carries stuff for you. He's just like a nice little companion.
Oh, but I just don't, like, there's no emotional kind of like...
Can he do tricks? Kind of. Can he roll over? And if you go bang, 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 does he like lie down as if he's dead?
I think so. Oh. I'm sorry the dog isn't good enough.
I've played like about an hour of The Last Guardian so far, and that is basically a game about going around with your big dog, Mike. It's a big dog.
It's a cat slash rat bird.
It's a cat.
It's more of a cat.
It's a cat bat.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely more feline as well. I just find it really funny to call it a big dog because it winds literally everyone up.
The Last Guardian, though, definitely falls under that category of... I don't think any of us were expecting
it. We were all surprised it even came out.
But it's very good, isn't it?
Yeah, fully expecting it.
Really mixed reviews. I've not played it yet, but I've seen people who've raved about it and thought it was amazing. I've seen others who've just been, if this game came out 5 years ago, would have been great. But the industry's moved on. You can tell it's been in development for a long while. Yeah. And people feel...
I don't think that holds it back, though, because it's got... I don't think, you know, the aesthetic is very singular anyway. I don't think it's worried about that. The model of the game isn't dated. The only things that do let it down, which everyone will comment on, are, you know, some of the more like you know, where the camera can swing around to sometimes. Yeah. Just like Final Fantasy.
Yeah, it has frame rate issues as well. I'm from one of the sites that went big on the, like, it got an essential at Eurogamer, and it did.
It was a great review as well, by the way.
It's stunning, though, isn't it? He's such a... I can't stand that man.
Yeah.
It's a very good piece of
critical writing.
One of the things I really liked about that game, and it's why I kept asking you about the dog in Flame of the Flood, I guess, is because that game is, to me, it's not really about the aesthetic or the how technically competent it is. It's all about like looking at that big dog's face, Mike.
It's glistening eyes.
And trying to like, what are you thinking right now? Like, why are you not doing what I want you to do? Are you a bit mad at me? Because we had that whole thing in the cave at the start and I'm still not sure where we're at. Like, it's one of the best examples of a game that makes you actually think about a character, not in terms of like, why isn't the AI doing something here? But like, why isn't this big creature that doesn't fully understand what I am, just as I don't understand how it works? Like, what is it struggling with here?
So you're the one at fault, the computer, not the game.
Is the thing that I've seen the division on.
And I think if you buy into that, I think people really like it. And if you just go, well, this is like, the AI is just like not... playing ball here.
Because I've seen,
dogs do, because dogs like to play with balls and it's a big dog. I think that is the difference, definitely.
It's people saying the control system doesn't work and it's very frustrating, and then it's people saying, no, it's meant to be like that because it's an animal that you're trying to get to do stuff.
I mean, I got wound up playing it at preview when I was trying to jump off a crumbling bridge, ledge thing, and Trico. Trico, how are we saying? Yeah, it's going to catch
Treacle,
you.
The big dog.
Treacle the dog.
I'll start now.
And, you know, so like, 3 or 4 times I jumped off at what I assume was the right time and his tail swings down. I miss it.
Right. Okay.
Miss it. And it just made me think, if that was maybe a game that development started 3 or 4 years ago, maybe by a slightly bigger team or a team less directed by one kind of person, it'd probably have a prompt in there. mm-hmm. or an option to have a prompt. Or yeah. like, you know, it'd have more kind of quick timey things in there. That it doesn't, I quite like. You know, that's in keeping with Colossus and Eco before it. But yeah, I can totally understand how that game will frustrate people.
Yeah, I also wonder the difference it makes depending on what kind of relationship you had with those two games that preceded it as well. Mm. I played Shadow of the Colossus, but real late, so I don't have the same kind of... I think it's a fantastic game, but I don't have any sense of nostalgia towards
but
it.
But you can still play that today, and like when people talk about... Like,
it absolutely holds up.
And the visuals don't matter because you invest in the world. Everything is consistent. I say the same with The Last Guardian. You know, if you look at it closely, you're like... That doesn't look like a 2016 game, but I mean, the beast, the dog, if you will, mm-hmm. does, I think, look amazing a lot of the time. Yeah. You know, the way his feathers blow in the wind so beautifully.
Oh, yeah, I know I think the Digital Foundry guys at Eurogamer are doing a piece at the moment looking at like what that game looked like in 2009 when they showed it off then compared to 2016. And it is remarkable. It definitely has come on a long way.
I mean, it moved. I mean, you know, I think Mark Cerny came in
and it got cancelled, actually cancelled at some point during that.
Onto PS4. So they had the architect of the PS4 come in and help them move that game to the PS4. I mean,
and that's why Knack 2 is happening. That was the trade, I reckon. It's like, I'll sort out The Last Guardian and now we're going to have a Knack 2.
I know no one wants Knack 2 thing.
Listen,
because Knack 2 was harder, just kind of it was almost a little joke that people say, like, E3 prediction, Knack 2.
And that's the reaction at PSX as well. Because I was watching that stream and, like, you know, people were going, woo, yeah, for loads of things. Then, like, Knack 2 plays out and the crowd's like,
oh,
I love
what?
It.
Nothing at all. I'm so excited for that game now, though, in a sort of a weird way. And I totally genuinely...
You tweeted that, didn't you? Like, Knack 2, think about it. Or something to that.
We might have.
Before it was announced. Yeah. I mean, I think we all knew it was going to be announced.
But I genuinely think the reason that game exists is because Mark Cerny is too important to Sony that they can't not do things.
Okay, Mark, it's been a few years.
You can have Knack.
I honestly think that's the story. You can have your thing. I mean, have there been many kind of platformy games that have stood out for you this year? I haven't written it down here, but Ratchet and Clank was quite good.
Oh God,
yeah,
it really was.
Yeah. I did like it because
everyone liked it.
It was one of those times where, because obviously, when I first played Ratchet and Clank, I was like, this is amazing. It looks fantastic. Because, you know, I was quite young, a teenager. And it came out and I was like, this looks as good as I remember it, which is nice to get that kind of...
Once again, really worth looking at those two games side by side.
Yeah, because...
Your brain does weird things with time and what things look like.
I think everyone said about it. I know I did. It was like that. It perfectly captured your memory of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than it actually being like a remake of the game. Yeah. It was really well done in that respect.
Wasn't it supposed to be like I can't remember. They had some ridiculous marketing slogan, but it was basically like the game from the movie, which is based on the first game. So like, and the movie ended up being a bit crap, actually.
I didn't see
the movie in the end.
I do forget that
a lot of it's in the game anyway.
The cutscenes. And you can tell because you're like, this actually looks shittier when it goes into the movie.
That's damn. But unlike Final Fantasy 15, which seems to have inserted some King's Baby, which I found really weird. Because when I played it at preview...
Yeah, it was...
They put it in after.
We had a really nice moment. We did the IGN premiere for Final Fantasy 15. And the guy who plays Sean Bean's voice, what's the name of that character?
He's the king.
Regis.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Or was that the name of the car?
That's the Regalia. But I'm pretty sure it's Regis because...
Wouldn't that be a great twist at the end, though, if the car turned out to be the king after all?
Like some sort of weird Transformers crossover.
Well, I mean, I played it to the end, so...
Right, it doesn't happen.
That does happen.
But there was something there was something really nice because we had the guy who played the body... Of Regis, basically did all the mocap. And he looks like exactly like Regis in real life. He's got like long white hair down to his waist and like really, really tall, kind of swooped about the building. And then we had the director of the game come in and we were in the green room and the director walks in and sees the actor. But of course, he's spent years looking at this actor's as Regis. So for him, it was this, you saw his whole face light up in this mind-blown moment of going,
my game came to life.
And he runs
I have superpowers.
A massive hug.
That's excellent.
It's real coincidence. Nice. You look a lot like this character I've been working on this game. Yeah.
In fact, that's why I'm here.
So who do you work for? Yeah.
That's a very nice story.
Let's kind of round up quickly some other games that you've loved a lot. Like, hit me. I'll do two rounds. Cool. Alicia, hit me with a game you love and why.
I've really loved a game called Event Zero, which is an indie game. It's like 350 million miles away from Earth. You are floating in this luxury space yacht called the Nautilus. And it's like present day, but it's set in an alternate reality where in 1980s we invented space travel. So it's kind of like 2000...
Did we not?
Yeah, exactly.
Did this not happen?
Who knew? But it's kind of like this 2001 A Space Odyssey meet 80s thing, because the space yacht you're trapped on is from the 80s, so dated tech. And the only mechanic in the game is typing into these terminals to talk to the ship's AI. And the AI just wants a friend. Like, it just... And you can type anything. So it starts off, and the first thing it says is like, hello, like, what's your user profile?
So you're like ASL?
Yeah.
No, We did a video gamer for our community club where it was me hitting on... I tried to get the AI to go out with me for half an hour.
How did that work?
So I just basically wore it down for half an hour until eventually it was like, yeah, fine, we'll get married.
Did it really? That's amazing.
Well, I said I tried for ages, and then I was just like, nothing's working. So I just went, listen, enough with the charade. Like, I love you. Let's run away together. And it was like, yeah, okay.
Oh, amazing. I love that.
That sounds like a nicer version of something like the movie Moon.
Well, you say this, it's really dark. So you can...
So it's not all flirting with an AI.
No. I mean, that's obviously how you start.
Does the AI want to kill you eventually?
Well, I'm not going to give any spoilers for the story. But like, so, I mean, the main part of it really is you're meant to use it to be like, oh, there's a locked door. Can you open? And so you like type in commands, but you have to say please, otherwise it gets a little bit shitey with you. You've got to phrase
it
well.
Schools.
Oh, that's why it was getting shitty with me, because I never said please.
If you just write a command and just say like,
I love you, please.
If you just say like open door, it like kind of goes, okay. But if you go, Kaizen, would you please open the door and write out like a full sentence? It's like, great. And if you say thanks after it opens the door, it's super lovely. I'm so ingratiating with this robot.
That sounds like a good game.
It's like, really, really
fun. That's presumably a PC sort of
game. It's a PC game. It's brilliant. It's
totally... It'd be hard to play with a PS4 controller.
Oh God, imagine having to type stuff in.
Oh, that would be hell.
I mean, they said the touchpad made that easier. It doesn't. It really
it
didn't.
It never does. Alice Bell, what would you give a shout out for?
Stardew Valley.
Oh, good. Farms and love.
Yeah, it's Stardew Valley is amazing because it's a little like top-down farming kind of 2D, and you run a little farm, but it can be so many things depending on how you play it. That can be so many things, so many people, because there are a lot of layers to it, and you don't kind of have to do all the bits to it, but you can do them as much as you want. So there's kind of like, there's a sort of dungeon, so you can do dungeon crawling in it, or you can actually do the farm.
I've only seen the farmy stuff. Yeah, there's you can go and on a killing spree in a dungeon. Yeah,
there are the little monsters and you can kill, but the point of going in is that you'll get, you know, minerals and ore and stuff to make more stuff, your farm if you want to. Or you can use it as like a dating thing.
Build a
trap
around the bones of your enemies.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. You can do like a dating thing and like get married to someone in the village, or you can just run your farm. Or to me, it was kind of, I described it as southern farming gothic, because you turn up at this town, they're like, yes, this was your father's farm. And then they just say weird stuff to you like, if you have anything you want to sell, just put it in the box. I come by every night and collect them. And I was just there like, okay.
It's like the opposite of those like Amazon crate things, right?
Yeah, and
just
you
leave
can,
it in the box, we'll take it away.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so many things, and it's
we'll
so layered.
Rupees.
And you get little requests. One of my favorite things is there's a jobs board, so people could be like, can you get me a melon in 3 days? And you're like, fine, here is a melon from my store of melon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, delivery, like Tesco will do that for you in 3 days.
But this is one of the first ones I got was from a girl in the village, and she was like, can you please get me a, and then obviously fills it, but it was like, can you please get me a salmon or something? And then it was like, you know what for, winky emote. And I was like, no, I really don't
understand.
I thought I knew what it was for until you said,
exactly,
you know what it's for.
It's the winky face there though, isn't it?
It's the,
that's the bit that's strange. Yeah.
It was something, like, it was like, girls will know. And I was like, what are you doing with this?
In Stardew Valley, they've got a very particular way, the girls of Stardew Valley, preparing salmon.
But very good.
It's not as red as the salmon you might have had.
It's on PC.
Why is that funny?
But I think it's coming to console next year soon.
Why not? They do often do that kind of thing. Chris?
XCOM 2 for me, I think, yeah.
Strategy Aliens.
I'm struggling between whether or not Overwatch or XCOM 2 has had the biggest impact on this year for me. It's a sequel to perhaps my favourite game. and it really didn't disappoint. I don't know if anyone's played XCOM Enemy Unknown, which is a fantastic game in which you fend off an alien invasion, but the beauty of that game is that you look after this little squad that's getting better with each mission and getting more powerful, and then you've named them and given them different color armor and you love them because they're your friends, and then they'll die in a mission and that's it. And like, if you're playing like on Iron Man mode, which is the only way to play XCOM, all right, I don't want to hear anything else. Like, that's it. You can't reload, and like, that's part of the story.
They're gone forever.
Yeah.
Right.
So XCOM has been around for a long time, but this brought the franchise back. And then the sequel to this really successful reinvigoration of the series just nailed it. It basically, there's new aliens and class types, and like, it looks prettier, and there are procedural maps and all the stuff you'd expect from a sequel. But really, it's like the stuff that they learned about their player base last time around and reacted to. They force you to be a more interesting player throughout the game in a bunch of different ways. One, the fact that the maps are procedural means that you can't sort of predict what you're going to encounter each time. There's always a turn timer to consider. Like, every mission, if you don't complete it and get to the extraction point within like 8 turns, you lose and your soldiers might not even survive. And that sounds like the worst thing in the world.
Too stressful.
I remember like they dabbled with that a little bit in the last game. And I thought, if you go full in on that idea, you're going to piss everyone off. But it forces you to, instead of like moving very carefully and sort of defending your squad at the end of each turn and just like sort of edging through the map, it forces you to like move with a bit of momentum and be more interesting and take risks. Because the game in the series is best when like, you move forwards because you feel like you have to, and then you like trigger another group of enemies and you're already fighting one anyway. And suddenly like, you've just created this horrendous situation for yourself that you're going to have to stare at for like 10 minutes to try and work out if you can even get out of it successfully. And it sort of encourages you to make more mistakes and end up in more of these situations. It is stressful, but you make it through it. And there's like no feeling like it in the games I play. I look for Iron Man mode in every game I play now because of that. And so see a sequel that really understood its audience and then changed things to make them play differently and took a risk, because they could have really upset people with that change, was just what I wanted. And it had some technical issues at launch, but I just couldn't care. It was too good. I really had an amazing time with it. And that studio just has my heart now. Whatever they make, I'm gonna be excited about.
And that's on everything now, isn't it?
Yeah, so it came out on PC in February, and then consoles was a little bit like a few months ago.
Yeah. Do you think it's funny? Like, I don't think I've heard anyone else really talk that game up in terms of best of this year.
Yeah.
Did it come out at a time when everyone was like, because it was PC only, it kind of got overlooked a little bit?
It's a weird one, because the Enemy Unknown was a huge...
So I've got
huge success, and like brought people in that didn't care about XCOM, including myself at the time. I think the technical issues at launch definitely scared some people off. My setup was annoyingly okay, which is frustrating when you're reviewing something and then you later discover that like some people were having real slowdown or like real long loading times. So I think that definitely played a part. Some people have looked at that and gone, maybe not. The fact that it didn't launch on consoles at exactly the same time hurt it, I think, because a lot of people played Enemy Unknown on consoles, and you need that discussion. I think for a game of that size, you can do it if you're GTA. You can do like a PC launch and then a console launch somewhere else, and they're two massive events and everyone loses their mind. But with a game like XCOM 2, where it's in a niche genre, I'll admit, I think if you want to get the same kind of excitement, you need as many people to be able to play it at the same time. And I think I get their reasons for why they chose not to do that. They wanted to focus on PC versions so that they could make the game in the right kind of time frame. But it did. You're right. No, I haven't heard a lot of like game of year talk around it, other than like Rock Paper Shotgun and PC Gamer. Because there are a bunch of dweebs
in your office, presumably.
And me
just
and bullying
people into
pretty much
into putting it up there. Just briefly, were there any games that came out this year that you were all looking forward to, and you played them when you're like, oh no, it's not as good as I wanted it to be?
I can't think of any huge disappointments. Like Final Fantasy 15, I think I wanted a bit more from, if I'm honest. I would have liked that big story like we talked about before to have landed a little more, to have more of a payoff to it. But it surprised me in other ways, so I think it'd be unfair to call that a disappointment.
Yeah. Do you think No Man's Sky?
Yeah, perhaps. I didn't have the I don't think I ever had quite the same level of like
heightened expectation.
Yeah.
I wasn't on board the hype train for that one in the first place.
So I was expecting kind of what I got, but
that's the thing.
At the same time, I stopped puttering around in that game after about sort of 15 hours. I thought I've kind of
has anyone played it here more than that?
I think I made it up to 5 and it was kind of like, cool, great. You know, by the time you got through that first solar system bit, I was like, cool, I'm done.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that is actually, you're right, that is a disappointment just because, there was so much within our... within our job, it was such a huge thing for the audience. I think that was the disappointment has come not from what I really wanted from the game, but more from the fact that like the people we talked to about this game, like a big percentage of them felt let down by it, and partly by our role in that. I think because you know some of the preview content from across the board,
very excited about it,
it was the big game. It felt like a huge launch, and we all wanted to be part of that. And then it didn't live up to that. And also the backlash has been disappointing to be around. Like I've felt pretty lethargic about that side of games sometimes. So the very personal attacks on developers is never something I don't think to see. So the disappointment is there, but maybe not. I got what I wanted out of the game, and it was okay. It was like it didn't change my life.
Have you guys been back and played it since the updates?
The foundation.
Oh, no, I haven't. Yeah,
because apparently, I mean, I've not either.
You could build a house now.
Apparently,
right?
They're quite sizable changes to the world. So I'd be intrigued to go back now and see whether.
I think that's what Christmas is for, isn't it? Get some time off.
Absolutely,
that's when you want time to go back.
Well, because that was my issue with the game fundamentally, was that I really love the idea of it, but even though you have this entire universe at your fingertips, you feel like it felt so lonely. Even when you came across NPC characters, even when you saw other spaceships flying through, even as you were surrounded by all these different animals, they felt cardboard and 2D, and that, you know, the ships were just on their own course, and the only person in this entire universe who did anything of any meaning was you. Mm-hmm. And like, it seems with this update, they've kind of tried to address that a little bit and make the world a little bit richer and add in some new things. So I'd be intrigued to go back and see whether it's any better.
The space buildings, that is a big part of that, with like NPCs that you can interact with and like research I think you can own a freight ship now that you can summon to your planet, which it all sounds like big, cool changes. And I think a lot of people are starting to come around to the idea that they might fix it. But I always thought the vision for No Man's Sky was sort of like Flame in the Flood, I guess. Like you're always pressing forwards. And the base building bit for me was like, I don't get how that meshes with like, you're supposed to
the galaxy.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's a response to what people have asked for. So maybe I'm not the right person to comment on that, I guess.
Well, I would say the only things that I wasn't like super hyped for them, but like Recore didn't come out as any of us, I don't think, really wanted. It was a lot simpler and repetitive than we wanted. I think bits of it were still really good.
I forgot that even happened. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, but another game that I think most of us kind of forgot about was Mirror's Edge Catalyst as well, which came out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There was that small matter of that. Yeah, everyone loves Mirror's Edge, and here's another. Oh dear.
Do you know what? I'm so annoyed at myself for that one, because I loved the first Mirror's Edge, and I've been meaning to play Mirror's Edge 2 for forever. I've literally had it on my shelf at home, and every time I sit down to play, another game's come out, and it's just been buried, I feel like, in this year.
I don't think the makers of it mind. Buried.
It's a bit everywhere. I think the response was a sort of a universal
not to worry. And in terms of just to wrap up, were there any games that you thought were going to be out in 2016 that haven't been, and you're like, for goodness'
Horizon
sake.
Zero Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Desperately. It was meant to be around now, I think, and it's been pushed back to February 2017. Yep. So it's not too much longer of a wait. But
Assuming it stays
for the February launch date. But I mean, I just think that's screen-licking
gorgeous.
Have
you played some of it?
No, I've not looked, played any. I've just watched the gameplay that's already out. Have you played it?
I got chunk of it in E3. They kind of did a slice at E3 where you could do a couple of small missions,
like taking
basically.
Taking down one of the dinosaur robots.
You're taking down something and collecting some
resources.
Game's
great,
resources.
But you can save that.
Taking down some robot dinosaurs.
Oh yeah, the dinosaur robot.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you finish Final Fantasy 15, you can go back to the open world stage by talking to a magic dog that will take you back into your memories.
That's useful. That's great. That's really good to know.
By talking to a magic dog.
Yeah, great. There you go.
2016. I thought we were past games having this thing.
No,
with dogs.
No, never.
Mate, The Last Guardian, tell you.
Fable had a
it's the year
Fable
of the dog, isn't it?
But I'm excited for Horizon Zero Dawn. I think it's a movie right up my alley.
Absolutely.
I mean, Mass Effect 2, obviously. Mass Effect has got that move back. That was originally meant to be this year.
I'm not sure that how surprised I was
I wasn't surprised by that.
But. Yeah, we've seen the actual first gameplay for what they called the first gameplay. Like there was a big tech demo. Look what it looks like in 4K at the
PS Pro launch.
And they were like, no, but that's not actually the gameplay.
I was there. I saw it, and it's like, look, there's someone playing Mass Effect, but that's not the real Mass Effect.
Yeah, I still don't know what to make of that game because the Mass Effect series for me is all about the characters, and I don't know anything about them from the gameplay we've seen. Looks a little bit Dragon Age Inquisition. I liked Inquisition, but I don't really want another one.
The characters looked a little bit more cartoony.
Oh, no, sorry, I meant in terms of the gameplay. I don't really know what to expect from...
Which I'm down with.
From the characters, yeah. I'm glad that there's a Krogan in your squad. That's always
you need Krogan, that. Krogan, female Turian as well.
Oh, I will be excited about that because it's Mass Effect, but I don't really quite know what to expect.
I'm default excited, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's fair.
My expectations are pretty... straight down the middle with it. I think because the stuff that we've seen so far, it reminds me a lot, it feels to be riffing off of some of the space stuff that we've already seen. Like a lot of it reminds me of Destiny. Like the scanner mechanic looks pretty much exactly like the scanner that Ghost sends out. The just like the traveling around, there's a bit where you're in a vehicle and it's almost exactly like being on a sparrow. And like the gameplay that I've seen so far hasn't made me kind of go, oh, this is something completely new. It's kind of, but if you know,
they can't
you're
do
fans,
anything too new though, can they? That's the thing.
Yeah.
But yet they can because it's Mass Effect Andromeda. They're like, it's not in the same like thing.
By the sounds of it, they are distancing themselves from that story pretty dramatically.
Yeah. I can understand why. Like.
Yeah. But like I don't think there's going to be any sort of crossover in terms of characters or your decisions from last games, which is, so they have room to do interesting stuff. And I'm going to hold out some hope. I just, the sort of the scanning and what looks like an open world where you're going to be chasing down objectives to tick off a list reminds me of Dragon Age Inquisition, which is a game that I liked, like I say, but I felt like I don't want that to be the entire format.
It's Dragon Age in space.
See, I would be fine with Dragon Age in space. I played some Dragon Age the other night. I stayed up past my bedtime.
Is that Inquisition?
Yeah. Inquisition.
Okay, yeah,
yeah.
Right, fair.
Never started it. I have it. Never started it. One of those, like your Mirror's Edge things. It's like, is today the day? It's not the day.
And you also know with a game like Dragon Age, you are not going to be able to just play it for eight hours. And then
also, you need to play Origins. Like, you can't, you have to.
Origins is the best one.
Yeah, I think so. But like, I think that is going to be the divide. And like, they need to make a choice as a studio how they want to think about RPGs now. Because Origins was sort of old fashioned, I guess. But I loved that about it. It's my favorite as well.
Was that the... That wasn't the second one.
It was the one where they did Origins, the dialogue.
The Origins is the first
one. It was like you had seven different beginnings and you could, like old school, you read each kind of dialogue option stuff. Word for word.
You say that, but that is a huge... The moment you go as a developer of RPGs from like written text responses to fully voice acted stuff, it becomes way more expensive to do each conversation like by a ridiculous amount. So your amount of like... how different you can make those situations play out has to be reduced as a result.
To be honest, I like it less when it's voice acted. One, because you choose options emotively. And sometimes you think you're going to like gently probe someone and then they full on grab you by the cuffs
The L.A. Noire effect.
Absolutely, the L.A. Noire effect.
Oh, God,
And also like the whole point, one of the ways I play RPGs is also for like imprinting your character.
Sure.
And like, you know, you play
it's harder
it
to do that when,
that you
when they
make.
Give a voice, right?
And it's way harder to do when like...
Unless that voice is Geralt, of course, which is just
I mean, exactly.
I'm just disappointed there wasn't more Witcher this year. I think that's where I'll leave it. I loved Blood and Wine and I was very sad when it got to the end of it.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? Well, at least for the Geralt stuff now. That is very much it.
I'd still like the Ciri starring Witcher game that is basically Metal Gear Rising, but in the Witcher world, just like 360-degree slicing.
I got what amazing. This isn't topical to this year at all, but what an amazing journey that studio's had. They are like, they're massive now. They can release a fantasy card game and people actually give a crap when Hearthstone exists. No one can do that. The Elder Scrolls can't do that. No one, like, if they're like, guys, we're doing like a beta for our Elder Scrolls virtual card game. And it's so difficult to get anyone interested. Like, The Witcher is somehow big enough that
it's just because you can even do so that. Many people that, played Gwent in the game, didn't
apparently
they?
Apparently they're really sound as well. Like, they're just kind of sound people. Maybe just until they're famous. Now they're big, they'll be like...
I can't remember the main guy. Martin? I met the CEO at the start of last year and he was very nice.
Yeah, very complimentary from Eurogamer, like, I swear, spends half his time in just in Poland. We're not entirely sure what he does, but he comes back with something from CD Projekt every so often.
Comes back with a new t-shirt.
He's not going to come medallion. Back eventually, I'm aware of that. But yeah, like they do seem like at least one odd thing to end of year podcast on. CD Projekt seem like nice people that are like interested in Poland and Polish game development.
they do seem like nice. I'll tell you how I'll end it then, because okay. I was thinking the other day, and I put a tweet out to the effect, I would have loved a little bit of Witcher Christmas DLC up at Kaer Morhen.
Christmas DLC.
Just Geralt round the fire with his mates, because there's a wonderful scene in The Witcher 3 where we're all getting pissed up. And
Santa Claus would have to be some kind of mythical
Santa Claus is
slay,
one of the
though.
Trolls from yeah. the hills just comes down with, like, you know, rock.
Oh god,
rock.
Yeah. Is there actually
rock.
Any good Christmas DLC
Train.
To play at the moment?
Hitman.
Oh, has Hitman got some? Oh,
Hitman's
yeah,
got
course,
some Christmas
yeah, yeah, yeah.
DLC. Yes. Yes,
another good game of this year, which we should probably just say Hitman was good this year.
Hitman was good.
The end.
For all the reasons we said, Dishonored 2 is really good. Like, Hitman's got that
Hitman
kind
is
of
also
like
good.
Trace and like Hitman's, ridiculous yeah. Freedom of expression.
And actually,
in terms
really,
of killing people,
I really enjoyed the episodic way because it meant that you could just absolutely rinse a single episode and then move on to the next. Yeah. Yeah. The next one was out, which was.
And like, it's going to get another wave of interest in January, isn't it? Because they're releasing the whole thing on a disc.
I honestly wish you'd asked me on when it was like a less good year. Like, 2016's been an awful year, don't get me wrong. But in terms of games, there's just loads.
Yeah.
And like, I thought it was going to be shit.
Tons we haven't
Pokemon
mentioned.
Go. We haven't said Pokemon Go.
We haven't said Pokemon Go. I haven't mentioned Abzu, which I loved, or Oxenfree, which I loved, or Thumper, which I loved.
Thumper was amazing.
I know. There have been lots of good games. So
none of the VR stuff that's come out.
We haven't mentioned VR.
Yeah, I think that's VR. Yeah.
Res Infinite was great on VR. And
I thought Uncharted 2 is bloody good as well.
Uncharted 2?
Uncharted 2 was good.
Uncharted 2 was amazing.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with that.
No one's disagreeing with that.
Uncharted
4,
I thought, like, fair play to them.
It was good.
The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to knock those big games, isn't it? But I thought Uncharted 4 was very good as well.
We spent too long on Overwatch, I'm sorry.
We spent a long time on Overwatch. I'm going to have to pick it up again and play it. But just to wrap up then, thanks for listening to this episode of the Waypoint UK podcast. I've been Mike Diver. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Diver. You can follow Waypoint at Waypoint. We make it easy for you. Alicia, where can people find you on
I'm
Twitter?
At Alicia Judge, because I'm original.
We got there early. Alice?
I'm at Baby Got Bell.
I'm glad yours isn't just your name either. Mine's at Bretters, which is sort of like my surname, I guess.
It's what people
call it. But with a Z on the end, because I grew up on the internet and made some poor life decisions. that's where I am.
Thanks everyone for listening, and see you in January. Bye.
Bye.